This episode of Django Chat is brought to you by The Stack Report, a monthly longer form piece on application development, operations, and the process and business of making software. You can support the show and subscribe at buttondown.com/Carlton or follow the link in the show notes now. Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vinson. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Today we've got with us, amongst other things, PyLady, Python core team member, F-string lover, and fellow Python podcaster, Mariata Wijaya. Hi, Mariata. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Hi, Carlton and Will.
Mariata, I want to kick off that all of those things I just listed off, the big sort of scary one for us, or the big impressive one there, is Python core team member. What on earth is a Python core team, and how do you get to be a member of that?
All right. It's actually not that scary, but really what it means is that Python core team member you get if you go to the GitHub for CPython repository, the Python programming language, I get the merge button there. That's the privilege of the Python core team member. Basically, you're considered a maintainer of Python programming language.
So you're the person to talk to if we want to sneak our PR in, right?
Well, how do I say this?
No.
A Python core team member as a maintainer, we get to review pull requests and actually decide to merge it for you. But that's actually just one of the things we can do. To me personally, I've been more involved in the workflow and documentation of CPython. So I think I'm actually one of the few people who rarely commit to Python code. Most other Python core developers, they do write a lot of code inside CPython code base. But my interest area is documentation as well as community outreach. For me, as a maintainer and as a core developer, there is in addition to actually writing code to Python, which we have a lot of other people doing that, I don't need to be another coder to myself. I feel what we lacking is community outreach. Like, I like to use my position in the community to like try to advocate for the wider user community, and especially for the underrepresented group members in the community. How can I give them voice? Because a lot of people don't have direct access to other Python core developers. I try, at least. I don't know if I've been successful. I try to pay attention to what's happening in the wider world and see how I can help bring people's concerns and voices closer to the core team. So that's a little bit of what I'm trying to do. I don't think I've been successful.
Not successful in bridging the gap, you think?
I don't think we've been, I don't know. I don't think it's a done process yet, and I don't think we'll be finished anytime soon.
Yeah.
But I'm still trying.
Okay. I mean, we have similar in the Django community. There's the sort of the framework bit itself, but it's sometimes quite removed from the user base, and it's removed from the wider community sometimes. And it's something we struggle with too.
Yeah.
Can I ask just a maybe basic question, which is how many core team members are there, and how do you communicate? Is it all online? Do you ever meet in person? Is it like a monthly thing? I mean, so for Django, the nonprofit board that runs Django monthly meets online and then has other duties. So I'm just curious, how does Python core do it?
Oh, okay. Yes. We have maybe right now about 100. Let me look it up just to be certain. I just had the number the other day.
I tried to look it up, and I wasn't sure exactly where to see.
It's a private repo.
Okay.
You know what? I have just written a script the other day. It's about 130, 140 core developers today. And the way we communicate is actually most of them are public through, we used to communicate through mailing lists, but in the last maybe 5-6 years, we started using Discourse. So discuss.python.org is an open discussion forum. It's completely public, actually. Everybody, if you're interested in engaging, that is the place to go, discuss.python.org. We will be discussing a lot of things. Actually, we discuss about PEPs. New features are discussed through this course. So as a member of community, if you're interested in participating in Python core development, a lot of people think it's just about you go to the repo, you pick an issue, you create a PR. But that's just a small aspect of it. A lot of the activities you do is actually discussing the issue, talking instead of writing code. Not talking, I guess. Writing your thoughts into comments on issues and pull requests and discourse. So it's not enough to just, I'm going to pick an issue. If I couldn't find an issue, I'm not contributing. Like that's not how it works with Python. And I think that's also not how it works with any other open source projects. You gotta engage and participate in all of these discussions. So Discourse is where most of us are communicating. We also have a private Discord, the chatting platform Discord. We also have a private Discord server that is open only for core developers, though we also invite a few like people who are being mentored more closely, like who are already on the path of becoming a core developer. We also have our triagers there. So it's more of a chatting platform, but it's private. The idea is just sometimes you just want to get quick answer, right? We chat. Any decisions we made there will be reposted first publicly on Discourse. Discourse.
I know. I get them confused all the time too, so don't worry. Yeah.
Yeah. So we chat privately, but then we always bring it to public space so that even the wider community members can still participate and share their input before it becomes final. So
I was going to say about the Discuss. So we have the same software for the Django forum, and it I'm comfortable in the Django forum. Every time I step over to the Python forum, it always feels like Nemo looking over the edge of the reef. You know, it's like into the big blue. It always feels quite scary on the.
It's not
especially
scary.
In the PEPs discussions.
Yeah, I think that might be the scary part because the PEPs are basically, most of the time, is brand new things you never heard before in Python. These are, I think, even for me, when I first joined, I had no idea what a PEP is. Like, I thought a PEP is PEP 8. That's the only PEP I ever know for maybe a decade. The style guide of, you know, Python code. So I thought, when I first started participating and I saw people are talking about PEP, whatever, and I thought, what are you? Are you creating another style guide documentation? That was one of the big aspects of me learning about core Python, like understanding what the PEP process is, and it's mostly new features you haven't seen. It's a process of how the Python community decide which big new feature we want to accept so that it's not just based on, you know, whims. It's not based on, well, Guido just wants to add something, you know. It's actually discussed with the whole community. People would write up a proposal like, let's add f-string or whatever, saying these are the pros of it or there are some cons, but the benefits outweighs the cost. Like you have to really explain why this feature is needed. And the whole community needs to be really convinced that, yes, we want this feature. So that's the PEP process. And that's the majority of what Python core team members are participating and doing. Is that too rambling?
We have a similar... No. Yeah. That's perfect. We have a similar thing in Django, the Django enhancement proposal, devs. Mm-hmm. And the trouble is no one ever wants to write one. And it's understandable because it's hard to write, and then you get people nitpicking on every line, and you get criticisms, and it's a hard process to go through. But it seems, at least from my perspective, it seems like it's a necessary thing, right? If you want to add a new feature, you have to explain the new feature. So, from your perspective, PEPs are a good thing, right?
Yeah. Well, so that's now I'm interested. Can I ask why? If you don't go through DEP, then how do people get these big features in?
Well, there's the rub. Things don't happen. So small features happen, and then people are like, but we haven't had big features. There's a lot, Django rolls every release. There's some nice new features coming each time, but for a while now, it's been kind of stable. There was recently a DEP pass to add background task worker in, and that's progressing, and that needed a DEP, and that was a big feature. But we haven't had many of those since, say, the async DEP, which was half a dozen years ago probably. And so we really face at the moment this difficulty between like the need to explain the features and then the sort of perceived barrier to entry of doing that. And as someone who's in the Python world very closely, I was wondering on your take and like.
I think you just have to start doing it and make it a habit. And I really do think the PEP process is really useful. If not, it really helps you articulate your thoughts. And it helps things to be decided more objectively because people, the steering council will make decision based on this big documentation you prepared, the PEP, the proposal, where you outline everything. Like they will not be reading through every single nitpicky discussion forum that's happened. But if you will have to summarize, your thoughts into this documentation, this technical documentation. And because the steering council will be deciding just on this, I felt it's an objective way to really, first of all, document your work and an objective way to make decisions instead of randomly reading docs and just say, well, yes, I guess let's do this. Like, why you do this? There is no reasoning, or you can't pinpoint to a specific documentation saying we are including this feature because Marietta says so. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
With the PEP process, with the PEP documentation, you get to really review your ideas, your proposal, I feel, more objectively.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
So there's 140 or so core members, and then there's the steering council of five people who are the deciders, right? Is that's the hierarchy of how decisions are made?
Yes. So I think core team members, we can decide on pull requests on our own, like just like before, even before the steering council existed. So the steering council really decides most on the final decider of the PEP, the major features. We also, as I think I mentioned before, we have triage members. They also have like ability in the repo to label things, close things even. And we have a lot of triagers as well. And since the introduction of the triage team members, GitHub have this new feature only recently, I think, maybe in the 5 years or so. We have a lot of new core developers who went through being a triager first, and then eventually they got promoted to Python core team member. So that's a path to become core developer.
I wanted to ask you, Marietta, because I saw you toot on Mastodon a while back, that you talked about triager being promoted there, and you said something like that there had been 20 men promoted since the last woman was promoted. And I think, so I wanted to ask you about that and about diversity in the core team and how we might, what can we do to improve it? Because as great as the Python community is and as great as the Django community is with shared values that we have there, like we still struggle to get women into those key technical roles, I think.
Yeah, I think now since I posted that tweet, we probably have two more men promoted to Python core team. So the number is even bigger. you're asking what we can do. I don't know. I've been thinking about it for years. I think I know what needs to happen. I don't know how to make it happen. Like I think it's going to need like a more coordinated effort instead of just one or two person trying, you know? And it's the same issue in the workplace as well, right? I think it's not just about why are there no women applying for jobs, but it's also the same question is why are women leaving the job, the tech industry? Why aren't women staying enough? And like, why are women starting to contribute and then they don't stay long enough to become a Python core team? I think that's the big question. It's not that there are no women. It's not that there are no women in the world. It's that there are no women who can write Python code. It's also not that women are not interested in writing and contributing to Python or open source. I think there are other things like why can't they continue to contribute? Because contributing to open source and specifically to Python takes a lot of commitment. It's not 30 minutes a day. It's not even an hour a day. Okay. It takes a lot of free time because right now open source contribution is associated with volunteer work. I think very few people, most open source contributions are volunteer and free. So why are there a lot of more men who have the ability and privilege to be contributing to open source to the point that they get to be promoted, whereas women aren't doing the same? Like, what other barriers are there, and how can we break these barriers? How can we make it easier? And I don't know, and I think it's not just about the external barriers. Like some barriers, maybe if women can get paid the same as men. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we don't have to work twice as hard in order to be treated the same.
Yeah.
We'll have the free time. Maybe if we don't have to be caring for our children. I mean, not caring, like, I think that came out wrong. Maybe if we are not burdened, we don't have to be burdened with figuring out childcare arrangement. We will have that free time. Maybe if the community isn't too toxic, like if it's actually welcoming, if people aren't sharing inappropriate jokes in front of women, we will stay longer. Like I think it's not just like it's the those external barriers like workplace life, but also us as a community. How can we make this group more welcoming to everyone, not just to a certain group of people? And there's just a lot of things that caused women not wanting or not being able to contribute for a long term to get to that stage. And I just don't know how to fix it. I've been trying.
Oh, yeah.
I tried at least by showing, at least I thought, if I show, you know, present myself out there, if people can see that, hey, these are, if people say, you're so inspiring, I want to be like you, that's, I thought maybe that's good enough, people will actually start trying, but maybe that's not actually good enough.
Right, but you need that. You need the you need the inspiration. That's one thing. But you also need the community to be welcoming. You talked about the internal to the community. So that's where things like the code of conduct are so important. And, you know,
it's still
somehow not given. And then the economics, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And I guess maybe as the community, you know, you think of what you can do. I know no one person can do all of this. Maybe I can be the one from within the core team to try to see ways how the core team can be more welcoming. But I can't be the one giving women job. I can't be raising salary. So maybe whoever have that power will do it.
One thing I've noticed in the Django community, and I'm curious if this aligns in Python, is that many, if not most, of the contributors are have a high degree of independence. So they run their own consultancy or they work at a small startup. It's not very many, if any, people at big tech who are doing contributions to Django. I mean, there's a number of people at places like Zapier or something, you know, so that's a bigger company, but it's a little more consulting. I'm curious if that aligns in Python, because one of the things, as you said, is it takes a lot of time to do this. So you either need to have somehow the privilege to do it or your employer needs to be on board with it. And I think even if you're at, pick a FANG corporation, they're not really going to want you to spend a couple hours a week on open source. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a two-parter. Is that mix similar in Python? And how do we overcome that, right? Because the big salaries are at these companies, but they're the companies that don't pay their employees to work on stuff. So you end up at conferences, it's mainly, from what I see, a lot of consultancies or small business owners who are doing the boatload of the work on Django.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting perspective. I use Django, but I haven't contributed much. I think I have one tiny documentation PR to Django. But I feel it's a little bit different demographic, if I can even say demographic. Now let me think. Well, so first of all, I am also self-employed consulting, so I don't... It's a tricky thing. Like I can't bill my clients for my time spent at open source. But I know there are actually quite a number of Python core developers who are employed at larger corporations, and they do just Python. I think some of the people who work in Red Hat and Microsoft and Meta, I think they have a few full-time employees, like the whole Faster C Python team. I think they are all core team members employed by Microsoft. So I see a few, actually, we have a few people who are still in college or in school, who became Python core developers recently in the last few years. So you really, so that's another path, I guess, being a student, you have the time. So maybe I'll say this. Don't think you need to be a CEO or a CTO or whatever to become a Python core developer. Okay. As long as you are willing and you're willing to spend time, you can get there. But yeah, I think most of the people I interacted with in the core team, most of them are employed at larger corporations. There are a few who have their own consulting, like myself. I know there are a few others like that.
This episode of Django Chat is brought to you by The Stack Report, my monthly longer form piece on application development, operations, and the process and business of making software. It's my chance to go deeper on the topics that let you build a successful career in software. I'm telling you what I think after 2 decades in the business. Maybe there's some hot takes. You can support the show and subscribe at bundao.com/Carlton or follow the link in the show notes now.
Well, I think part of it is that Django's not, or a big company wants to, you know, if they're using Python, they want to have a say in what's happening, right? Whereas Django, I mean, for example, Meta uses Django for Instagram, a version of it. They used Django for Threads. There is no one that I'm aware of from Meta involved in Django. Meta does not contribute to Django. And that, you know, is also the case in most of the other large corporations, even though we know they're using Django. So they're just not there or contributing financially or in employee time in any way. And so it's an interesting thing, right? I guess, you know, if they want to, a lot of places might think that Python is Django, it's one and the same, and they want to just put their money and resources in one place. I think maybe it's that large companies often have their own fork of Django when they get to a certain size, and so feel like, I don't know, they don't have to support it, but they're still probably using core Python.
That's interesting.
But it's a very different dynamic, and I asked that question in part because Jeff Triplett, who we all know, was on the PSF for a long time, and you know he's a small business owner, very involved with Django. And then for him, seeing the Python dynamics, it's felt like a different world, in that you have a lot of people who work at large corporations who the corporations are, you know, supporting them spending time on open source. That in a way that I don't know anyone in Django has that.
That's very interesting, and I would trust you. I don't know about for sure. I would trust you if you say they probably have their own fork and they maintain it internally, because...
Oh, I mean, I know they do. I know Instagram does. I know Instagram does for sure. And Threads, I believe, use their version of it.
Okay.
And I feel pretty confident saying that many super large companies, that's what they end up doing.
That's interesting that they rather spend those energy or whatever resources for their own private
We had Carl Mayer, who I think is a Python core developer.
Yeah.
He's talked about it. He came on the podcast and talked about it. And it's just an interesting dynamic, you know, because Django, right? We're like the little kid brother at the big Python adult table.
Yeah.
Right. And there's so many similarities on the one hand, and yet there are these cultural things like this one, for example, of who's doing the work that are very, very different.
I mean, this reminds me of when Meta was, they have a fork of Python like for Cinder, and they came to Python Language Summit wanting to merge it to CPython, I think. But at least they take that step to talk to core team member about their fork. So it's interesting they don't do that for Django. Like, why aren't they trying to merge that to Django? I don't know. But I know, recently Meta hosted us for Python Core Sprint, which is an annual event where Python Core developers get to meet and sprint for the entire week. So they hosted us. I know there are
If anyone's listening and wants to host Django, we'll take it. Yeah. We've talked about Django sprints.
Yeah. I'm also interested.
I mean, and part of it is because when you're on the inside of the PSF in Python, right, there's all these budget constraints, and yet someone on the outside may think, oh, Django, you know, is equal, right? Whereas Python has an executive director, it has a dozen or so team members, it has millions of dollars of donations, and Django has a budget of about $200,000 total and volunteers that run everything. So there's, Carlton was a fellow for 5 years. I was on the board. Neither of us are in those roles now, but so I can speak a little more freely, but it makes sense, but it's frustrating when people assume that there's these similarities
when it's
quite different.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say about it. Thank you for sharing this. Now that I know, I don't know what to feel. It's good to know about these different dynamics. And are they just, okay, maybe just gossiping? Like, is it because...
Oh, gossiping's fine. I like gossiping. I mean, so specifically, so PyCon, right? So we've had previous executive directors of the PSF on this show. You know, PyCon is a big moneymaker. We're just recently chair, and you've done many things. So we just came from DjangoCon US. So there's DjangoCon US, DjangoCon Europe. There's now DjangoCon Africa. They are entirely volunteer run, like 100%, which is kind of crazy. You know, not the size of a PyCon, but still hundreds and hundreds of people and all these things. So all of that is a way to ask you, what was your experience like as a PyCon chair? Because I've been to PyCon. I think I went to the 2019 one in Cleveland, and it was, you know, just orders of magnitude bigger than a DjangoCon, right? So I can't even imagine organizing that, let alone chairing it. So I guess the specific question would be, what's involved in chairing a PyCon?
So PyCon US... So the PSF hires a few full-time employees. So PSF has paid staff to organize PyCon US, people like Olivia Sals. She does a lot behind the scene. And as the conference chair, I really more of the liaison, if I can say, like be the face between the PSF and the wider community. So, and my role was not paid, although I do want to share for transparency. I did receive some kind of gift, donation. I don't know what it's called, but I received stipend or something. I received for my 3 years serving as, so 1 year as PyCon US chair coach, 1 year as PyCon US co-chair. So as the co-chair, I learned from the previous conference chair. And then I did the chairing for 2 years. And for that whole time, I received $20,000 USD from the PSF. So I think people think everything is volunteer. I want to share this for transparency. And this is something you will be able to check maybe when PSF files their taxes, you get to see a line, probably. So that's what I get. But what it involves is just planning the whole thing, helping to help plan the conference alongside the PSF staff. But I also give a lot of oversee the design of it, like the website, the graphic designs. I actually try to review every comment or every page that goes out before they get approved. Every page on PyCon.us.org, I read it, proofread it, click the links, just making sure it's good. Also give suggestions of improving the conference, like as you know, the insider of it, I have that privilege. Like I get to say, I want PyCon US to do this. I want to see this at PyCon US. I actually get to not just wish it, but execute it. So made some changes to PyCon US. Maybe, I don't know if people notice, but it is different. It's different. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Not. Yeah. Everything's my head. But then I said I want to do this. They said, okay. Just start doing it. I also write blog posts for PyCon US, and one of the things that I care a lot about is just doing outreach. I think for me, I don't know if they do a lot of effort on that before. Maybe they did, but when I sign up for conference here, it's definitely not one of the, you know, must do or requirements. But the outreach effort was something I do a lot, that I try to make sure people know about all of these travel grants, about travel grants to attend PyCon US, because I know it's a really valuable experience and I don't want people to miss out on it. So I talk a lot to people, say, there's travel grant, don't miss out the deadline. There are speaking opportunities. I encourage lots of people to just apply and speak, because it can elevate your career. Like do a lot of, yeah, all of this outreach effort was something that I just decided I wanted to do. And I think in some ways, maybe somewhat successful, I don't know. All I know is that this year we received almost 1,000 proposals to PyCon US, like talk proposals, like 980 or something. Like that's never happened before, even before the pandemic. Like we probably received 500 max. So I think last year was 700.
You can ask how many accepted talks are there?
I think only 120.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
right. So it's quite competitive, right?
It is. But the if you talk to any other program chairs, you might know, we love it when we have lots of good talks to select from. So it's a good problem for conference organizers. So it means you really get to build a really strong program.
Well, I wonder if I can ask, so this is a Django podcast, talk about Django. So you're, as a Python representative, how do you see Django and the web fitting into what Python is doing and focused on these days, right? Because obviously, data science was huge. Now it's all machine learning, AI, however you term it. Like, how would you describe sort of the mind share of the Python community right now?
I don't know. But I think from the core team perspective, you might be right that Django is not as... It's a third party to Python. It's not even connected well enough. How do I say this? But I use Django for work, and actually I've been using Django since Django 1.4. So that's my earliest Django. So I actually
before custom user models.
Yes. Did we even have migration back then?
No migrations. 1.7.
I remember that. I remember that pain. Yeah. I used Django for a long time. So I use Django to make a living so that I can contribute.
Well, let me ask you about that then. So what do you think Django is doing right? What do you think Django is doing wrong? You know, as someone who's using it professionally, but isn't as embedded on the internal stuff as maybe Carlton and I have been.
I think there are actually a few things that Python took inspiration from Django. The steering council model that we have, the Python steering council governance model, was largely inspired by the Django community governance model. If you read PEP 8015, I think that when Nathaniel J. Smith proposed this proposal, like one of the things he said, like this was inspired by Django community, and we want to make take the learnings and incorporate to Python. So that is how Django has helped the steering council with help the formation of the steering council nowadays, and which is a model that we actually, I think it's still working. We have 6 steering councils terms already, I think. Yeah, so we are paying attention, and I think the Python developer in residence model, which is a paid staff role in the PSF to be cut as a core developer, that was also inspired by Django Fellows program. Like, I know they probably talked to you, Carlton, before they have this role set up earlier. So yeah, we take inspiration. The other thing I wish we could take inspiration from, and I don't know how to yet, I really love what the Django Notes program is doing, like onboarding, having the captains, having people contributing through this, you know, 3 months program. I think it's such a great way to mentor and onboard new contributors. I wish we have it for Python, but I don't know how. So I'm watching the Django Notes space and see like how we can one day incorporate it to Python. So
yeah, I think it's been revolutionary for Django. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of just a new wave of people and enthusiasm and shining a light on what Django core people and fellows are doing. Because mm-hmm. I assume it's a little bit similar with Python, but I'm biased because I talk to Carlton all the time. But most people, I would wager that, and I'll put a number on it, like 99% of Django users have no idea that the fellows exist. And then of those 1% that know about them, I bet an even smaller subset could actually tell you what they do mm-hmm. in terms of day to day. So there's this information problem, right? I mean, and so one of the things the Django Knots have done is there's double-digit PRs merged into Django every week, right? There's this idea that Django is boring and stale and nothing happens, and yet stuff is happening all the time. But some of the Django Knots are now putting that into the Django News newsletter. You know, I think in these technical communities, we spend so much time doing the doing and, you know, talking and implementing code that when it comes time to marketing and showing appreciation for people who've done the work, that gets kind of left behind. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the many great things about the Django Knot program is bringing in new people who are shining lights and doing the work and helping some of us who are still, you know, kind of like Atlas, holding up our little sections of the area, you know, help us do more, right? So some volunteers from Django Knots now have this whole section on the Django News newsletter on updates to Django, which is there in track, or it's there on GitHub, but nobody's looking at it, mm-hmm. right? So just someone taking the time and committing to putting it into a more consumable form is such a great thing. And yet, you know, that kind of thing should happen more across the board. Yeah. Like, this is something the fellows and the community is talking about. How do we have more public attribution for our contributors?
Anyway,
so yeah, I get fired up about Django Knot. It's like Django Knots. It's we just had a core group of people who came together and made it happen. And I think importantly, some of them have, you know, one Sarah Boyce turned into a Django fellow. Like, this idea, like you said, the commitment of open source. I think this is one of the problems, and Carlton has talks on this. The commitment is too much. Mm-hmm. It's too much to expect hours and hours a week if it's not part of your day job at, you know, Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And then also, it should be built in that you do it for a couple of years and then you go to something else where you can contribute, but you're not just like off the reservation, mm-hmm. right? Because that's also how it's kind of have been. It's all or nothing. And yet, I mean, look at Carlton and me. Neither of us technically has a role in Django. And yet we're still doing peripheral things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know where the question is on that, but I just got fired up with you mentioning
that program. I think that's good. I agree with you, like, there needs to be more visibility of the work we all do. And I think it's the same issue with the CPython. I think we all, like, assume, at least the core team maybe, they assume that, well, everything is open Everything's on GitHub. If you want to know, just go.
It's just on GitHub. Just on GitHub, yeah.
No, it's not enough. You need to make sure information reach people, and they don't go to GitHub. So we need to spread news. I really like the newsletters that you all have, the Django News. It's really a good way, because people read blogs. They don't read GitHub issues. They read blogs. They have RSS. They have podcasts, right? That's the format that people consume, and we need to just provide all of this to the community. So, yeah, I like what you all are doing in Django. So,
well, speaking of podcasts and things we like you doing, I want to talk about your podcast, Mariana, mm-hmm. because you've started a new one. It's the PyCats, right? PyCats.
PyPodcats. So we have a new pod. We have a cut. It's actually almost a year old. And it's not just myself. It's actually initially started by a few people like Chuck Ting and Georgie Kerr and Teresa. Like, I think they started having this vision of like, let's have this podcast to have more diverse voices, just to make sure, you know, the Python community hear more about all of these great people, because maybe they are shy, maybe they are not on social media or whatever, but doesn't mean they don't do great work. And what can we do to make sure we all learn about all of these great things they are doing, their contribution, impactful contribution to the Python community. And I'm actually the last member of the team. Like, they ask if I want to help out. I said, yeah, okay, I do care a lot about it. And I've been helping out as well. So now it's four of us. It's called PyPodcats, Hidden Figures of Python, where we interviewed lots of people in the community. So far, we interviewed mostly women, but we have plans to include even more people in the next season. So in this season, we interviewed people from as far as Ireland, Dublin. We have Mona from the Philippines. Mona is a high school teenagers who does Python, and she teach other teenagers, other high schoolers Python. Like, it's incredible. I was playing video games when I was her age, so like, it's really inspiring.
Yeah,
about
15,
learn about
that's good going.
These are the kind of people, like, most, I don't know if you talk to Python core team, they don't know about this. And that's what we are trying to do, like, just making sure you know about the diverse community members who are doing great work. So this, anyway, we have lots of episodes out already. You can visit pypodcasts.live, and we are available on, we have RSS feed, so you can listen it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcast. I don't know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes,
from,
it's RSS feed. So
yeah,
just put the URL there.
Super. Yeah. You talked about highlighting things. Like the same with the Django notes that we were just talking about. It strikes me that there's two aspects of it. One is showing that, like, you being, you know, in the Python core team and being a visible member of the community, to highlight members of the community, it helps bring others in. It's not it's not just a load of white men. It's more diverse than it otherwise would look. But as well, particularly with the Django notes, they get out of it. They get something concrete that they can point to and said, I did this. And then it perhaps gives them a chance to get that opportunity or that job or that thing that gives them the chance to earn the salary that then gives them the time to contribute back. And, you know, it's priming the pump from that,
mm-hmm.
from that
yeah.
perspective.
Absolutely. And that's also one of the reasons I continue to contribute to open source and Python. Just, I know as a woman as you know, person of color in America, you know, as someone who looks foreign and have foreign name, have foreign accent, like I know I am when my resume comes, it's probably not going to be the first one that people see, right? Let's admit it, it's true. But being able to say, hey, I spoke at conferences, I contribute to open source, blah, 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 that adds up making me having a higher chance of getting hired. And I do find that, you know, my career really have improved a lot after, you know, after becoming a Python core dev. So, and I want for more people to have this same opportunity. And I'm continuing to do it because I know it benefits me, but it also can benefit lots of people.
It's not just about diversity hiring as well. It's like I've given talks on why contribute to open source, and it was exactly the same for me, you know, white man, etc. Like when I started contributing to REST framework, the hiring dynamic with companies just radically shifted overnight. Instead of it was, oh, can you do this? Are you any good? It was like, oh yeah, you're maintaining the package we're using. And the conversation is radically different. And that's available to everybody. Now, I obviously, you know, I perhaps have advantages that everybody doesn't have. But if you can find the time, if you can do it, then it does open doors.
Exactly. And I totally can relate to your experience. Totally agree. Yeah.
Well, I know we're coming up a little on time, but I have to ask you a Django question. This is near and dear to Carlton in my heart, which is, user authentication, user models. How do you like to do it, right? Because I just gave a talk on this. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I know you must have an answer, right? So there's one camp of people who uses the user model as is, uses a user profile model. There's another camp that likes to use a custom user model and put all the attributes on there. And then I would say there's a third camp that just goes abstract base user and just writes it all from scratch because they're hardcore and they have a way that works.
Because they know how to do that.
So my question to you is, what is your preferred method of handling a user if you have like a greenfield Django application?
Okay. I think not, and this might be because I just went through this recently. For now, I might want to have a custom user, which is option two that you mentioned. Custom user and extend it and have like additional things, but still like related to the user, the built-in user. I need to learn more about this idea of abstract user. Typically, I'm a big fan of the ABC module of Python. There were times that I wished instead of Mixin, we used the ABC abstract base class module. So the reason I didn't say I'm going to use abstract user model is because I haven't seen it. At least in my code bases, I haven't seen people do it. So maybe if I see a good pattern of it, I will be open. But that
I think it's less common. But maybe it's just people. Maybe it's just people at Django cons and that I talk to are like, oh yeah, I just do it that way.
Yeah, just from normally, I'm a fan of ABCing things. So maybe if I see more of this example that you all are doing, I will be learning and trying. For now, I'm using the custom user model path.
Okay. No,
I think most people are. Yeah. Go ahead, Carlton.
So Python 3.13 has just been released like yesterday or today as we're recording this now. What's your favorite feature in recent Pythons?
I'll take that to start. I'm excited about the fact that git ignore files are now automatically, what is it? Oh, I got to look it up. They get rid of the environment variables, the .m file, right? Ugh, I got to look it up.
The VM, the virtual environments.
Brett Cannon did this, but it saves me a step teaching people.
Virtual environment folders will now be .gitignored by automatically. So you get a little .gitignore file inside them.
Yeah. Well, because I know Brett was asking a while, I guess a couple of years ago now, you know, is there a standard on what people call their virtual environment folder, right? Because there's some people like to do .venv, some people like to do .venv, some people like to do, you know, .myenv. It seems like one of these things that do we need to express our individuality through the name of our virtual environment folder? Like, it seems like it could be like a standard. I don't think it's fully decided, but, you know, Carlton's laughing. This is one of those things, right? It's frustrating, right? Because especially for me, like dealing with beginners, they ask me these questions and there's like buckets of like, oh, this really is important, like how you handle your user model. But like, what do I name my virtual environment thing? It's like, it really doesn't matter. Like, what do I name my Django project, right? You know, start project, what do I call it? Like, it's hard to, I wish I could just like put a flag on things and be like, this doesn't matter. You just have to make a decision. And this really matters. Don't mess this up, right? Because, mm-hmm. yeah, naming your virtual environment or naming your project really don't matter. Mm-hmm. But it all seems like one big mass of confusion when you see open source packages doing it all differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyways.
I don't know. Well, so I'm a weird person. When I see new releases, I look at what's getting deprecated.
Right, okay. What's your favorite deprecation then? What are you glad to see the back of?
I like that, yeah.
No, because new features means because of the reason, you know, Python maintains, you know, backward compatibility for like two years at least, right? New features don't affect me in, you know, at work as much, but things get removed that will break my code. So that's why I look at deprecation first. There is an interesting new thing called, I think PEP 702. It adds warnings.deprecated, in which can be used by static type checker to denote that code is being deprecated. Yes. So it's interesting. But I think there are quite a number of things being removed, or new deprecation warnings being raised. And I think people should know for now, when Python starts to say we're deprecating, when we start raising deprecation warning in Python 3.13, it means in 3.15, it could be removed in 2 years. So if you are using certain things that starts emitting these warnings, don't wait 2 years to remove it. Start now and start upgrading your code. Start changing so that when it's really, really gone, in 3.15, in 2 years, you're not scrambling. So my advice is, go look at what's new in Python 13. Look at all the new features, lots of great new features, like I think the JIT flag is there now. The free threading, I know lots of people are super excited about it, but also look at the new deprecations and start adjusting your code and upgrade. Please upgrade your Python.
That's my favorite like Jedi answer to that question I've ever heard. I need to steal that. Like when someone's like, what did you like that's new in Django? I'll be like, let's talk about what was taken out.
I've just scrolled down on the page there. It just makes me feel old. HTTP server, deprecate the CGI request handler. So this code was outdated, unmaintained, and rarely used. It has a high potential for both security and functionality bugs.
I do, Carlton. I'm like,
CGI was like, you know, yeah, well,
my bread
where
and butter.
I cut my teeth. I feel I'm going to let a tear ship drop for that one, but it's probably good to go.
Well, we could keep talking and talking. Is there anything we haven't mentioned that you wanted to bring up? I know you have your consultancy, CMD Limes, or over to you. Is there anything you want to mention or discuss before we head out?
Yeah, CMD Limes is pronounced Command Limes, is a new consulting Command
okay,
Lines.
That makes more sense.
It's a new consulting company that is founded by three women in Python and Django who you might know, myself. So CMD stands for Chuck, Marietta, and Dawn. So CMD. And we like this name because when pronounced like command, it's to show that we are leaders in the Python community. To show like this is the branding of us, but we just created it. We haven't had the time to actually like have a coming out party. You know, we haven't formally launched, have a big announcement saying, "Hey, everybody, here's our company." We haven't done that yet, but maybe this is it. But you can check us out. Basically, what we do is we're Python and Django consulting company. We have, as you might have known, we have people experience a lot in Python and Django and infrastructure and DevOps kind of thing. We are open for work.
All right. And there's a website that we're going to link to down below. Yeah, CMD Limes. The next time we have you on, there's a whole discussion about consultancy that, you know, Carlton will get fired up about. But you can let us know in a, you know, a year or two down the line how it's all going. Because Carlton cut his teeth as a consultant for many years.
I feel like so I need to learn from you all because I'm new at this, and that's why like we haven't successfully launched it. Feels like there's a lot to learn. So that's why.
But you're doing it the right way. You're starting with a reputation, right? Carlton was just a philosophy PhD. Who was doing it, and then he got involved with open source, and then he became, you know, the Carlton Gibson that we all know and love.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure I'd describe it all like that, but yeah. I started with my suitcase under my arm and went around and knocked on doors.
I think reputation is one thing for sure. I know we have that, you know, that bit, but I think we need to do more marketing and, you know, more marketing, probably advertising.
Well, this counts, right? It's an excuse for the rest of the fun discussion, right? We'll just put that in there. People will find out about it.
Well, thank you for letting me talk about it.
It's been really good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, really appreciate this opportunity to appear in Django Chat.
Yeah. Well, and we said at the beginning, I think we weren't recording yet, that although both of us know of you, certainly this is the first time I've had a conversation. So that's one of the wonderful things about the podcast is, you know, people we look up to and admire, we get to meet and have a discussion with and share that discussion with other people. So yeah, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we are at djangochat.com and we'll have show notes with links to everything and new episodes coming soon. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. This episode of Django Chat is brought to you by The Stack Report, a monthly longer form piece on the application development, operations, and the process and business of making software. You can support the show and subscribe at buttondown.com/Carlton or follow the link in the show notes now.